Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. From a local business to a global corporation.
Partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful you'll make every move matter.
Visit bankofamerica.com/banking for business to learn more.
What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to another edition of DTNS Labs Interview. I'm Tom Merritt. Very happy to be joined today by David Malky, author of Wondermark. David, thanks for joining us.
Tom, thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for creating Wondermark, too. I think I discovered the webcomic, if people aren't unfamiliar, probably through Boing Boing a long time ago. And it makes me laugh, man. Thank you for doing it.
Well, I'm glad that you like it. You've been a longtime reader, and I appreciate all your support over the years. And Corey over at Boing Boing has been a big booster as well, and I'm very grateful for that. And back in the day when blogs mattered, that was very important. To have a link like that from a blog.
Yeah, it really was.
So I'm glad that when it counted, that he was there and you were there, and we all are here now.
Yeah, it was a massive triangle of awesomeness that has perpetuated to this very day. If people are unfamiliar with Wondermark, I will let you describe it. How would you tell people about your comic?
So it's a newspaper style comic strip, which is a comparison that has less and less valence every year. And but it's sort of, you know, the rectangular kind of format comic strip typically. It's like The Far Side, where it's different every time. There's no consistent characters or storylines, with a few notable exceptions. But the unique thing about it is that it's a collage strip, which means it's made using illustrations that I, not the ones that I draw, but rather illustrations that I find in old books. So Victorian era, Edwardian era books, magazines, storybooks, catalogs. I take the illustrations and I scan them and I take them apart in Photoshop and I put them together in different ways and turn them into comics.
So, I mean, this, this is something that was very, I feel like the technique sort of arises somewhat out of the zine culture. I remember in the 90s, I made zines. I was one of those people. And that was often a thing you'd do. You'd find something, you'd clip it out, you'd Xerox it or copy it back in the day. So did you take your inspiration from that? Did you come out of that at all? Or was this just you applying this yourself?
You know, I feel like a lot of my, it's funny sometimes, and I don't know if you have found this to be true as well, but you look back at your life in retrospect and you see the seeds of the thing that you did in ways you couldn't identify earlier. So like as a kid, I was like tracing peanuts, like by putting the newspaper up against a window and, you know, cutting and pasting them together to make new storylines. And later on, I went into work in movie trailers, which is essentially the same thing, which is like cutting things apart and putting them together in a different way. And so I feel like that must be part of my personality somewhere. I didn't specifically participate in the zine culture. I was too much of a, like, I was about to say too much of a nerd. I think you have to be kind of a nerd to be a zinester, but maybe I was too much of a dork to like not even be that into anything social. But I also feel like this, if I was inspired by anything, it's probably the cultural osmosis of remixing culture in general, which is how culture progresses. And if you look back at, you know, even this exact particular material I'm using, which is the ephemera of the late 1800s, typically, you know, people have been using that exact material in different ways for 100 years.
Yeah, I think this is a really good point as far as technology goes. I mean, there's very much the obviousness of, oh, well, these days with the web, you can make your own comic and distribute it, whereas before you had to convince someone to print it in their publication. But even the technology of being able to just scan something, to remix, to take old things and modify them is easier in a way that it wouldn't have been even 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah, I remember the first scanner I ever used was at I guess it was at school. It must have been seventh or eighth grade. And we scanned a picture from a magazine, and then we brought it in as like a one color bitmap into whatever paint program. And you could like erase with like the big square eraser and like retype something over some portion of it. And it's like, oh yeah, now we have power. We have control over this. And you know, and this is not to say that it was our first experience. I say me and like my friends experience with remixing things, because my parents had a store and they had an office in the store, and in the office was a typewriter and a copy machine. And I made great use of those as a child to like make little card games or write little, you know, books, and I'd copy photos from, you know, whatever airplane magazine, and, you know, draw my own, you know, cool adventures based on those. So I guess if I had been one generation older, I must have, I would have needed a mimeograph.
Yeah.
And before that, you know, maybe it would have been impossible. So I'm glad
your parents had been pamphleteers, perhaps you could have used their crank press. Or...
Exactly. I could have gone down in the basement, got ink under my fingernails.
Well, that's interesting too, because I remember doing similar sort of things, for my fantasy baseball league in high school, where I would create newsletters for that, but I'd have to go down to the print shop and spend 15 cents a page. So it really was a break on how much I wanted to do that.
It was a limiter. Yeah.
So you have, you having access to those tools, certainly, I don't know if it was a Cambrian explosion of creativity for you, but it sounds like it might've been.
Well, in the fifth grade, we had a currency in class, and you could earn dollars, like, you know, in class dollars for doing your homework or whatever. And there were different denominations of dollars that were printed in different colors of ink on the school ditto machine. Huh. And the lowest denomination, the half dollar, was printed just in regular black ink. And it took me about 45 seconds before I realized I could counterfeit those. And so I took some of those home, and I started running them off on the copier. And then if the teacher ever asked why I had so many half dollars, I just had this story concocted about how at one point I wanted to feel like I had a big wad. So I always asked for half dollars instead of other denominations. Uh-huh. So now I've got all these. Anyway, my mom walked in on me once saying, you know, she said, are you forging money? And I said, no, Mom, of course not. And then, you know, I had the story about how the teacher knew I had a copier, so she was just asking me to help and, you know, run some off at home. But in my mind, it was like, no, Mom, I'm not forging. I'm counterfeiting.
Yes, you're using entirely the difference. Wrong one. Therefore, I can legally say no to you right now.
Yeah, exactly. So, Mom, if you hear this, I'm sorry. You know, if you had asked the right question and back in 1989, like, it might have had a different outcome.
So how did you go from the copy machine to the internet machine and scanning and creating this? I'm trying not to ask you how do you get your ideas, but if you can sort of maybe give us an idea of the evolution of that led to Wondermark.
Well, I've always been a comic strip fan. Like, I was one of the kids that read the paper, you know, every Sunday with, you know, the funny section. And I feel like my generation grew up on and Calvin and Hobbes and The Far Side and you know, these names that you hear a lot. And Peanuts was big in my house because we had all those little paperbacks from like the 60s.
Oh, yeah.
And so I internalized that vernacular from a very young age. And I was always like an artist, and you know, I was always doodling and everything. And I wanted to do a comic strip. And I think every time I tell the story of the origin, I try and make it different so nobody knows the true story. But the sort of the short version is I happened across a book somehow it was a collected magazine from the late 1800s. And, you know, you see these engravings and woodcuts from the pre-photography era, where every single possible subject you ever needed to be illustrated had to be drawn by somebody.
Yeah.
And so you've got all these drawings of people and animals and, you know, buildings and all sorts of things. And I thought, well, I wonder if you could just use these instead of having to draw something. Like, would it be – I mean, it would be easier in some sense. And, of course, as I learned very quickly, it was also very limiting in a related sense. because you are stuck with what you have rather than what you just draw. And so I had to develop over time, you know, techniques for sort of, you know, manipulation and trying to make it sort of my own through transformation. But the initial impulse was like, I wonder if I can do this. And it turns out I could. Like, the answer was yes. And so I just did it a lot. And I realized, and as I mentioned before, I'm certainly not the first person to ever try and, you know, make a collage. But this particular comic strip, I think, felt somewhat distinctive. And I realized that while I like to draw, I could be the millionth best cartoonist in the world or the best person at this thing. And so I just did this thing a lot.
It sounds to me like you didn't have the consideration of avoiding copyright restrictions. It was just that you happened upon something that rarely in this world is in the public domain.
Well, I mean, that certainly was a factor, because I knew that if it was not in the public domain, I wouldn't be able to do anything with it. You know, like, unless it was something like commercial clip art, which, you know, someone like Ryan North has made great hay out of with Dinosaur Comics. So, that's also a thing. But I think it was the combination of availability, both in a legal sense and in a I had the book in front of me sense, and also the work itself is evocative. Like, there's something about Dinosaur Comics, and Ryan is a great friend and I'm a big fan, but there's something about the banality of it that is the point. Mm-hmm. Whereas with Wondermark, I feel like the intricacy of these, you know, master craftsman engravings adds a different quality to it. Like, it makes my work look better, even though I'm not the guy who actually drew it. Like, I gain some, like, credibility by association because it just looks cool. Well, and so I think leaning into that was deliberate.
Part of one of the big elements of humor is the surprise, right? The unexpected. And so having these, you know, Victorian ladies in their trussed up dresses and men on unicycles saying things that those sorts of people would have never said is sort of a natural platform, which you have turned into an art form. I'm not saying that it, like, anybody can do it, but that certainly is one of the underlying elements, it seems to me.
Well, that's one of the things that I appreciate about this material, is that it can lend itself to that or not. And mm-hmm. and as the person behind it, like, I don't know how much the anachronism is still surprising to a reader. Sure. I would presume if you read a bunch of Wondermark, the anachronism falls away pretty quickly. You know, that surprise that you mentioned, because you just get into the rhythm of it. And I would, you know, hasten to add, canonically, Wondermark is set in the modern day. It's just everyone has really good fashion sense.
Yeah.
But that being said, you can have a character say, you know, zounds, you know, what are you, you know, whatever. Like, I'm not even going to imitate it. But you can have something that does not seem of the modern day, and it still fits, because you've never really established what this is, this universe. It's always something slightly different from the previous iteration. And then that itself is a surprise, not just the anachronism, but the fact that, oh, this time it is anachronism, and this time it's not anachronism, adds an additional layer of surprise.
Yeah, as a longtime reader, I can say that while I expect it, it's not a, you know, literal surprise. It's still a fun tension that comes out that I enjoy, and the fact that you play within the style and then will venture out kind of keeps that fresh. I love that about the comic.
Well, I appreciate that. And I think keeping it fresh is what I'm trying to do, having done it now for 15 years. It's like, there has to be something more to it progressively. Otherwise, I get bored with it. And I feel like if you look back at the early years of the strip, you know, I think there's a couple good jokes in there. I like to think that I've sort of progressed in terms of, you know, my proficiency at joke writing since then. But the structure of it was much more like set up punchline, non sequitur, non sequitur. And if I was just writing those still, I mean, to be honest, it would probably be easier. But I feel like I want to be beyond that at this point. And so both in terms of the visual complexity and the sort of thematic and writing, you know, abstractions that go into it, I'm continually trying to sort of do something that still interests me. Yeah. So, you know, and I also feel like, you know, you have people in top hats, but then you can also throw in like a Revolutionary War guy in there, and they're just in the same room. Like, there's no acknowledgement of that. You know, at one point I had the idea to do a joke where there's a bunch of 1800s guys, and they're like, ah, look at those hipsters, and they're dressed like 1700s guys. Uh-huh. But then I realized nobody would get it because everyone just dresses whatever, however, in WonderMark. There's no concession to like any sort of cultural consistency. So that sort of joke is one that probably doesn't land unless you were to call it out.
Yeah, somehow. Yeah, you'd have to call it out, I guess. You're right. Well, that one half of the equation of any successful long-standing piece of art is that, like the continued creative challenge to keep it fresh. The other half is, of course, getting the money to continue it. And that is something that I know you've tried lots of the different offerings on the internet over the years, from direct support to Kickstarters, et cetera. You know, sort of a wide-ranging question here, but what have you learned in doing this for so long? Because, you know, people kind of the short way to think about the internet is like, oh, right, you just ask people for money on the internet and they give it to you. But it's not as easy as that.
Yeah. And I feel like every subsequent year that goes by, I'm sort of less and less sure of the accepted wisdom about it. I think the one thing that is true and consistent always is the virtue of being nimble. Because Kickstarter is around now, and Kickstarter, depending on who you ask, may be sort of on a downswing. Mm. Patreon is something that's come up in the last couple of years that people are using, as you know well. Mm. And but before that, you know, there was an advertising market on the internet that largely does not exist now, at least not in the same way. There are other websites that come and go. There were people who tried to do Patreon-style patronage in the past without much success. Akewood had a thing called Asset Bar for a while that a couple people tried to use that was essentially a membership platform like Patreon but never was adopted widely. Mm. And as you mentioned, like my business has largely turned on sales of merchandise in as direct a manner as possible because that's where the margins are. But that comes with an enormous amount of like labor and capital investment. And you have to have, you know, infrastructure to support that. You have to have a shipping setup if you're going to be shipping stuff. You have to have stuff to, you know, it's stuff has to be stored. Stuff has to be.
It's a whole business on its own.
You know, yeah, it's a whole deal. Yeah. And so I got into it. I mean, as I mentioned before, I worked in trailers, and so I had a job as I was just kind of doing the comic. And I did the comic for years before I kind of knew what web comics were. I had read, you know, a couple in those early days. But this is pre-social media, of course. And it was forums, really, that sort of were the way that people would connect with one another. And so I started to kind of meet some people in that field, and, you know, fans who would be on the forums would sort of you know, congregate. And I was a fan of other people's work, and so we would participate in sort of a social way. And then we would go to conventions and comic book conventions / small press conventions / that sort of, you know, large blurry category, yeah, of event,
fan type stuff. Yeah.
And some of it was craft fairs, and some of it was, you know, book festivals and whatever. I started going to those in 2006. The first one was in New York in 2006, and then that's become a mainstay over the years. And, you know, in varying degrees. One year I would do 12, and I'm down to like four big ones, just because of the time and investment. But, you know, people would come and they would discover your work there, and they would buy books, and they would buy I'm big into making things. So stickers and now it's like pins, but back then it would be greeting cards and posters and, you know, t-shirts and things like that. So just things that people might like, even if they'd never heard of my work. And then maybe that's an entree into the work, and I have flyers I would pass out and so on. So the books and things like art prints are the work itself. And then everything else, this larger universe of spin-off material, whether it's stickers or t-shirts or posters or calendars or whatever it is, they exist in the same voice and universe of the work, but it's not a comic. It's just something related to the same sensibility that gives birth to the comic. So hopefully you'll like it as well. And being willing to be broad in that way, I think, has been valuable to me, because some people are really into the idea of being a cartoonist, you know, capital C in Charles Schulz, you know, right. I'm going to die of my drawing board, and, you know, God bless them. But I think maybe because WonderMark is not a traditional comic strip in.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right.
because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with five different spray patterns, so you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
This podcast is supported by Tools and Weapons, the podcast hosted by Microsoft Vice Chair and President Brad Smith. Right now, on a special edition of Tools and Weapons, Brad Smith is sharing a vision for what Microsoft calls the new AI economy. It's an idea rooted in technological revolutions of the past, like the printing press, which created a vibrant marketplace of related innovations, ultimately leading to an explosion of books and readers. But he doesn't just give a history lesson. In the episode, Brad lays out the tangible ways that Microsoft is providing infrastructure and other support to those leading the charge of the new AI economy. And he explains the importance of using that infrastructure to ensure equitable access to AI to people all over the world. To stay current on insights from voices at the center of the conversation on AI, follow or subscribe to Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you like to listen. My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Some senses means that I never felt shackled to, like, I guess I just got to make more books until people keep buying books. And, you know, it was much more about, like, well, if you like my sensibility in the comic, you might like this, you know, sticker that doesn't relate to the comic really, but the sense of humor is the same.
Yeah.
And I have found that to be largely the case. And so then the second half of that has to do with, of course, attracting an audience. And that is just, in some ways, just a virtue of time and the virtue of starting when there were not that many web comics and gaining an audience over the years and, you know, getting linked up on Boing Boing and so on. And if somebody asked me how to do it today, I don't know. I don't know the answer. I really don't.
And there's not a single answer to it, I don't think.
No, there isn't. And that's definitely, I think it would be fair to call that an advantage, but it is also a difficulty.
Yeah. And what's interesting is you can grind it out and grind it out, and but once you get your audience, a core of them anyway, tends to stick around. I mean, userfriendly.org has not put out a comic in, I don't know, 10 years, and there's still people participating in the user-friendly forum because that's their community.
Well, yeah, it's turned into a community. And I think that's where things like social media are a double-edged sword because that, I mean, when Google killed Google Reader, I mean, I lost 40% of my subscribers.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those people may have picked the comic back up on some other method
or on an email list or whatever.
But man, a lot of them, you know, whenever you introduce a speed bump, you get some attrition.
Yeah.
And so that's where things like Facebook algorithms that don't show people every post that you make unless you pay them are, you know, I think in a large sense damaging to what we would hope would be this ideal way of accumulating an audience over time. But you also have to be everywhere. You have to be on Facebook and Twitter and, you know, an email list, and people still use RSS and people still come to a website, you know, on .com, even though that's, I guess there, somebody must, because I'm, you know, people still visit the website somehow.
So you
just have to be where they are. And I think the fact that the ad market is no longer there for websites, I think is good because it means our artists in particular are less afraid of just disseminating their work as widely as possible on social media, such that they try and just get more eyeballs on it. And I don't know why everybody doesn't do this, but I put my URL and, you know, on the file. And so if someone wants more of it, they can find it pretty easily. Some comic artists feel very like sheepish about that for some reason. But Wondermark also has the advantage of being very distinctive looking. So I think people who see it and who come to know it, they start to recognize it.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of the calendar as your part of your extended universe. It's one of my favorite things that you do. And it's one of the most interesting things you do, because I love how you document every year how it comes together and the different technologies and screen printing and such that you experiment with.
Well, and the calendar in particular is an interesting project, because it's something that is by design limited, because it's a calendar and you can only sell a calendar for like a month. I wanted to make a calendar and I wanted to make something that felt like a premium product. And so those two ideas sort of match well. And as you mentioned, it started out being a screen printed thing, and we do it now, you know, in different ways. You know, every couple of years it seems to change somewhat, but it's a thing that people like you, and for which I'm grateful, look forward to every year. And so that's just one more leg under the stool of like, well, this is a rock in the stream of the year that is always going to happen. And then I can plan certain, you know, other projects and income streams sort of based on that. And that's something I had to build up. I mean, this is going to be the 12th year when it goes on sale this year. Okay. And people who get it every year are sort of a big part of my, like the way that this thing sustains. So I'm very grateful for that.
So what are you doing now as part of this strategy that we've been discussing? Like where are we now? I know you have a Kickstarter going on.
Right. So right now, as much as I talked before about how books are not the only thing, this I'm doing a book. And
they are a thing, though.
They're definitely one of the things. And I had done a couple hardcover books in years past with Dark Horse Comics. And then they had a whole line of webcomics that I don't think did well for them, because they're not really a webcomics understanding publisher. But I'm coming back to that series that began with them with a new volume. And it's been a while since I've done a new book. So this particular collection is for comics from a few years ago. We're sort of picking up chronologically in the archive. And but it's got some real like Wondermark classics, in my opinion. And it's on Kickstarter right now through the end of October. We've already hit our funding goal, so the book will happen. We are now doing stretch goals, and all the stretch goals are the same, which is that we just add more pages to the book because we got a lot of backlog to get through. So I'm hoping that by the time, you know, we get the project over, the book will be larger than I had initially launched it with, and then we can just fit more comics in the same book for the same price.
The more you back, the more you get.
That's right. That's exactly.
If people want to find it easily, how should they look for it?
Well, so the comic is at wondermark.com, and then there's links on there, obviously. Or if you want to jump directly to the Kickstarter, just wondermark.com/book.
Oh, that's perfect. Easy to remember. We'll also put it on the website for those people who still like to go to websites as well. but yeah, that's great. One last question before we will finish up. Although, wait, hold on. Two last questions.
Yeah.
You also,
as many as you want.
Thank you. You also have an interesting giveaway that you're doing right now as well.
Well, yeah. So with the Wondermark books in particular, what I like to do is create some sort of value add where even if you've read the comics on the website, you still get something different from the book. I think the book is actually the superior way to read the comic. So I do a lot of bonus content. I do a lot of sort of follow-up jokes that sort of like live in the universe of individual comics, like what happened next and things like that. And so in order to give you a sense, I don't want to give away what that stuff will be in the new book because I want it to be surprising when you read it. Mm-hmm. However, I want you to get a sense of what that kind of is like. And so if you go to the Kickstarter page, just wondermark.com/book, then you'll see a download link for my last book as a PDF. You can just download it for free. And I mean, I hope it makes you want to back the project, but even if you don't, I mean, that's fine. I just want to get that book into people's hands so they can get a sense of the Wondermark, the comic, and then what the books are like in particular.
So you don't even have to back. You just download it.
Just download it. That's great. Again, like I hope you back, but
yeah, of course
it is a thank you from me for visiting the page.
Yeah, it's no obligation. You go, you click, you download, you read, and then you feel the impulse to back naturally.
Right. Now you feel obligated to me for having given you this thing, and you are just, you know, you get the telltale heart, you know, underneath your floorboards until you go and you click the back button, which will be live until the end of the month.
You just see that PDF staring at you every day.
Right. On your desktop.
The last question I have to ask is really just a personal question, because I'm really enjoying. I know you don't usually do running gags, unless you're making running gag into a joke as you did recently. But the Sick Elephant series has been really enjoyable recently. And I'm curious if you knew that was going to happen, or if it was just something that every day built upon itself, or how did that come about?
So what you're referring to is a series of comics that I've done over the last couple of months. And really, it's been every comic for the last 2 months or so. Has been a variation on the theme, check out my sick elephant, the phrase, check out my sick elephant, in some way or another. And the genesis of that, it was, I was at a convention, I was at Gen Con in Indianapolis, and, you know, I like to try and keep a schedule if I can. It's not always possible, but I like to try and do two comics a week. And in prep for the convention, I was, you know, just running a little bit behind, and so we got to Indianapolis, me and my buddy Sam, Sam Logan, who does a comic called Sam and Fuzzy. He and I are both from the West Coast, so we were both a little bit jet lagged. We were there at like 11 o'clock and not very tired. And I said, Sam, I have to do a comic tonight, or I'd like to do a comic tonight, but it has to be something simple because I am a little bit tired and we have to get up early. And I had my laptop and I was ready to do it. But, you know, and so with Wondermark, sometimes the idea comes first and sometimes the images come first. And I have that freedom because it's, you know, working with found images. But if I come up with the idea first, it has to be something I can realize in a fairly like, because I have to make it, I have to understand how to put it together if I'm gonna plan to do a certain idea or concept or joke. So I said, Sam, let's just brainstorm. We're both artists, we're both cartoonists. Like, let's just brainstorm some jokes. And he said, well, what if you do one where it says, check out my sick elephant? And then he was just riffing on it and it was not funny. And I said, okay. Well, what if it was this other thing instead? And after about 20 minutes of talking, we had about 10 sick elephant jokes.
Uh-huh.
And the second through the 10th one were not funny if you didn't hear the first one.
Right.
You know, and so on. And then and we kept going because none of them were really that good. They were all fairly dumb. And it was like, well, I'm, you know, are you sick, you know, rad, or are you sick ill? Well, I'm sick, you know, psychotic or whatever.
Yeah.
And so by the end of it, we finally landed. We were very slap happy at the end of it. And then we finally landed on one that I thought was pretty good. It's like, okay, that's it. That's the one. So I did that one as the comic. And then, you know, time marches on. You have to do another comic. And I thought, wait, what if I do like three or four more okay. sick fun jokes? Because we had been by now riffing on it like all weekend long. And I thought, what if we did a couple more sick elephant jokes? Like, I wonder if people would start to notice that this is just the same thing. Like, at what point would people like react to the idea that this is the exact same thing over and over? And then after I did two or three of them, I realized this is a very strange phrase, but like all of these words have homonyms. You know, Czech could be, you know, Czechoslovakian or, you know, whatever.
Right.
And so you could structure this and you could do, you know, you could flip the order of the words and it would still kind of parse. And I thought, I wonder how many of these you could do. And I made a list of them and I got about 30 of them. And I said, wow, what if I did all of these? Would people have my head on a pike if I just kept doing this sick elephant thing? The idea of like the stepping on the rakes 40 times. So I thought, well, you know what? The only thing that's wrong about art is when you don't follow your heart. So I'm just going to do this because I think it's funny. And so I just started doing, and then each one is like progressively more obscure. I tried to structure them such that they got like, you know, they built on the previous one, and it sort of became a game of like, how does the sick elephant relate to this particular comic that does not seem to have any sick elephants in it at the beginning or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then what happened was that people did sort of notice and they were like, what is happening in Wondermark? This is completely like, because there are no storylines really, except right. for maybe now and then there's like a two or three parter.
Sure.
And people were like, what is going, why is this, like, am I having a stroke? Like, what's happening? And I knew that there would be this like little fallow period of people being like, I'm done with the sick elephants. Like, I really am done with the sick elephants. But if I could push through it,
yeah,
we would get to the promised land. And so we started a storyline of like a particular elephant, mm-hmm. that we're going to now follow his story. And he is going to, you know, do a couple adventures here. And I realized I don't know if you have noticed this, but over the last 15 years of Wondermark, there's been about, seven strips with elephants in them in the past. And they're all tying into this story.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I'm going back and referencing all the past. They're all weaving into this continuity. Every time there was an elephant in Wondermark from the last 15 years, it's being referenced in this story. So that's a little Easter egg.
That's great.
And so anyway, I figured it out now. There's five more left from now until we're going to have the big conclusion, the big dramatic conclusion, because people are really like after my head at this point. But if you want to start from the beginning, you know what domain was available? Sickelephant.com.
Was it?
Yeah. So if you go to sickelephant.com, it'll take you to the first strip in the series, and you can read forward from there to see where we are.
Which was a while ago, because I lived in a different house when that happened.
Yeah, no, it was in like August. And like as it happens, it happened to also happen at a time like this series is happening at a time when like between my kid and some other things, it's like I've been very busy. And also the strips are longer than usual, so they take longer to make. So we're not actually moving through the series as like rapidly as we might. But we are closing in on it. And I should also say people are very interested in the Sick Elephants. It has nothing to do with the Kickstarter. The Kickstarter has no sick elephants in it. And that feels like a real missed opportunity.
Or a future opportunity, perhaps.
Well, so what I did for people that started to grumble, I set up two Google Forms, and they're linked on Wondermark. And one of them is like, put in your email, and I'll let you know when this is over. Like, you don't have to check the website. Like, I'll ping you in
a couple weeks.
And then I set up another form. It's like, I like the sick elephants. Like, and then I thought, well, maybe if I do some kind of book or something that's of the elephants, I'll have a little mailing list. Mm-hmm. And so I said, if you want more sick elephants, you put your name into this list. And it's like 5-1, a pro sick elephant.
Yeah, as it should be.
That's very reassuring.
Well, that's fantastic. David, thank you so much for joining us. And folks, if you didn't catch it, wondermark.com for everything, including the comic. And if you want to go straight to the Kickstarter, wondermark.com/book. David, thank you for joining us, and I hope you have a lovely Feast of Saint Apostrophe.
Thank you, Tom. I'm glad that your calendar is cluing you in to all of the Wondermark specific holidays that exist throughout the year.
Folks, you're not enjoying most of the year if you don't have a Wondermark calendar. I'm just saying. Thanks for joining us too and supporting us on Patreon. Patreon.com/DTNS is where you go to directly support Daily Tech News Show and keep it going and getting stronger. Thanks to everybody who supports us there. We'll talk to you soon.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Frogman Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.